As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Really appreciate you all tuning in once again to hear us talk about The Sopranos on the world's only Sopranos podcast. Just a quick reminder, real quick. Please give us 5 stars in a review. I know I ask that every time. And at this point, I'm assuming you guys just kind of like fast forward through this part.
Yeah, I would. Well,
you shouldn't, because you know what? It's very important to us and it doesn't take that long. You just go into the podcast app and you do it. And sometimes I will read them. We had a guy who said solid B+, tried to find a good Sopranos podcast. Apparently this is the only one. So, you know, that's good shit right there. This is what we need.
Yeah.
Help us with the algorithm. Okay. And just a real quick shout out once again, third time in a row, probably last time, to our $100 patron, Jason, who has the nicest dick in the world. Good fatty. Good fat dick.
Yeah.
I'm losing steam on. I don't know what
it's,
what else.
It's assertive but not aggressive. His dick. Yeah.
I like that. It's not
overbearing.
Not at all. Not at all. It's perfect. Not too long. Not too short. Not too thick. Not too thin. Mm-hmm. It's the Goldilocks dick. Anyways, 5 stars in review. Patreon.com/Frogcast. All right. Today, Vince and I are going to be talking about, from Season 6A, Episode 3 of The Sopranos, Mayhem. And our guest today, you know her from such things as being an amazing stand-up comic in Los Angeles. She is also a comedy writer. She's also just a fucking dope-ass person. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Ashley Ray.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah,
you know, I'm down for all things TV.
All things TV. That's right, because you also you podcast about television as well.
Yes, I have my podcast TV I Say with Ashley Ray, where I just talk about all the TV I watch during the week.
That's fucking amazing, because like we've had a lot of different types of guests on this podcast. We've had we've had our comedy writers. We've had our, journalists. We've had, for some reason, the lead singer of Eve 6. But what we haven't had is someone who does TV rewatching podcasts. And and it's just like, it's good. We're in the same business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about heroes a lot, but I feel like the TV rewatching podcasters are the real heroes. Like
Absolutely.
Every day at 6 o'clock, there should be people banging pots together, clapping their hands for, you know, the people who just give you sweet, sweet TV rewatch content.
TV rewatch reviews, you know, we're in it. We're in the trenches, and people don't get that. lot of times.
I hope so, man, because we truly are heroic people. Because it's one thing to like make a whole TV show. Anyone can do that.
Anyone can do that. And it's one thing to watch a show. Anyone can also do that. But to watch it multiple times and then say something about it, well...
Expressing thoughts about it, that's
impossible above, for most people.
Yeah, above most people's pay grade.
They can't do it.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before we came on, but I wanted to say it for the listeners, too, that Ashley has a tweet about there being a whites-only Michelle Williams and a blacks-only Michelle Williams. Yeah. And like it's one of those tweets that's it's up there with like... You know, one of those classic drill tweets like the milkshake duck where I think about like every 3 or 4 days or so. And
if segregation really ended, why is there a whites only Michelle Williams and blacks only Michelle Williams? It truly, I'm from Rockford, which is where Michelle Williams is from. We actually used to get our hair done at the same place. So for me, I always knew who that was. And anytime people say Michelle Williams, she's the first one I think of. And then a friend called me crazy for thinking of her first, and I was like, "Come on."
Yeah. No, it's fully it makes complete sense like when you say it, but also when you tweeted that, like I did have to Google the other like the old, other Michelle Williams, and then I was like, "Oh yeah, I should have known. I don't know why I would know that one less than like the white actress who always looks like she's smelling a fart."
Segregation.
Yeah.
And it's I actually had this moment with Francesca, my fiance, no big deal, where we were, I forget what we were watching. I think we were maybe watching, what was it? The Beyonce live Coachella doc or whatever.
Ah, yes.
And I remember at one point her saying like, oh yeah, that's Michelle Williams. And then we both went, no, that can't be right.
That can't be her name. No, that's somebody else's. That's someone else.
Only one Michelle Williams can exist.
Can exist, and she was in Blue Valentine. I saw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's only one, and she was, you know, the second hottest person on Dawson's Creek. You know, next to Pacey. Pacey was always the hottest. But this is not a Dawson's Creek podcast. No. This is a Sopranos podcast. That
could be an idea for when we run out of Sopranos.
Honestly, though, not a bad idea. But let's talk about your experience with the Sopranos, Ashley. First question, do you like the Sopranos?
Here's the thing. You asked me to be on this podcast. I have not watched the Sopranos. I've tried. I have tried to watch it. Like four times, because everyone's like, Ashley, you're gonna love it. You gotta watch it. And every time I get to the same part, and it's when Tony walks in, and I guess he's like visiting his mom, and there's a black nurse there, and Tony's just like, why don't you stop smoking that ganja? And I just start laughing so hard I can't keep watching. Like, it's like this Jamaican nurse, and he's just like, lay off the ganja, huh? And
I'm
like, This is funny stuff.
I mean, you're not wrong for looking at that scene and going, oh, this is definitely a harbinger for how the Sopranos writers are going to attempt to write race relations on the show, and especially black people on this show. They fail literally every time. And so you're not wrong to look at that and go like,
I just laugh so hard because it's just so funny, and they make like all these Italian guys like so over the top racist to me, like really like. Yeah, but I don't. My mom actually loved The Sopranos when I was growing up, and she was very strict about not letting me watch it. Like if she was watching it and I came in the room, she would immediately pause it. So I think I just like, built something in my head where I was like, I'm not allowed to watch this. Mm-hmm. Don't watch it. It's for adults. So I jumped right in at the request of this podcast. I just went ahead and watched the episode that we're going to discuss. But I mean, I'm one of those people, I've watched The Wire like probably 8 times, like in its entirety. I love these types of shows. And I know if I just sat the fuck down and watched The Sopranos, I'd be like, this is brilliant. Like, oh my God. Like, I would just be one of those people who's like, have you guys heard of this amazing show? That
Yeah, you probably don't know about it. It's like, it's just one of those really obscure shows.
People were mentioning it to me, and I finally, and wow, let me tell you. You got to watch it.
So then your experience then, because we have had guests on the show who have not seen The Sopranos, because my feeling about it is it doesn't really matter. I mean, if you're listening at home, have watched The Sopranos, then you'll get it.
You'd have different perspectives of it, which I think is interesting in and of itself.
So jumping in, at the beginning of the sixth season, did you have any like questions or were you in any way confused as to what was happening or who people were?
Not really. I mean, again, it's one of those shows everyone has talked about. So I knew enough to be like, oh, that's the therapist that he sees. Yeah. And I knew at some point he's like close to death in the series. So I was like, okay, I see that's where we're jumping in on things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like he has a pretty dangerous job. So.
Yeah. The mafia is, it's up there with like,
yeah, it's like crab fisherman,
COVID nurse, TV rewatch podcast creator.
Mm-hmm. And then mafia.
Yeah. So yeah. Very dangerous job.
Yeah, so I was like, him in the hospital, not too shocked. Okay.
Yeah. You're like, no, I get it.
Yeah, I was like, I'm getting this, but I was, I guess, a little surprised by just like the whole dream sequence.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is far more, I guess, artistic.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a lot of art
I get from this show.
Yeah, they do art in the show. It's a whole thing. But this is not a show about art. Well, I just... Anyways, this is a show about art. It is The Sopranos, and specifically, it's Pot Yourself a Gun, and we cannot start this podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, today we are talking about from season 6 of The Sopranos, episode 3, Mayhem, which premiered on March 26th, 2006. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
While the gang begins to turn on itself, Tony finds himself at the threshold, while Christopher gives another try to enter the movie business. However, this time as a producer rather than a screenwriter.
All right. Great, great synopsis. Yeah. Sounds interesting. Mm. Mm. But like, what was happening though at the time that this episode
came out? We can't evaluate art outside of the context in which it was released, and for that,
absolutely,
we have the Remember When machine. Walk, walk, Teddy, Daddy, Bob, Bob, Shoebop.
Remember then, remember. Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. We're going all the way back to March 26th, 2006. There was, in serious news, there was a powerful earthquake in Indonesia that left 200,000 people homeless, killed 6,000. It was centered 10 kilometers under the Earth's surface. It was a bad scene out there in Indonesia.
That sucks.
But,
that's crazy. Crazy story.
Around here we had the American Idol finale.
Oh, hell yeah.
And that was, it was breaking some viewership records.
I mean, what season was that? Who won?
Catherine McPhee was taking on Taylor Hicks.
I don't remember Catherine McPhee. I remember Taylor Hicks.
Catherine McPhee, she was in Smash.
She was in Smash. What's Smash? Do I know Smash?
It was a short-lived NBC sitcom that only lasted for one season, but it was about the perils of the Broadway music industry. It was good stuff.
That's all right. I love that.
Campy. It was like when Glee was big and every network was like, if we have a musical show, we'll have a hit. Yeah. And everyone was like, this show is very bad.
What are theater kids really like, though, when they stop being theatrical and start being real?
It was a horrible show.
Taylor Hicks' margin of victory over Catherine McPhee in Wednesday night's American Idol finale was likely substantial. Fox officials were mum on voting percentages, but Idol polling expert Jim Hellriegel, wow, what a title, you know?
That's a job. Yeah. Okay.
Says Hicks might have defeated McPhee by, quote, double digits. I think the margin of victory was significant, probably greater than 5%, says Hellriegel, who runs dialidol.com.
Wow.
What the fuck? This guy has got he started his own business about, like, doing stats for American Idol?
For American Idol. But also, why is Fox hiding this information?
Right.
Why can't we know what it is?
Because they're like, listen, this is a fucking, you know, a secret vote, all right? It's a secret ballot, and we're not even going to let, you know what they are? It's like what Netflix does with its ratings. Oh,
yeah.
They're like,
I feel like this was post Sandhya, and they're like, yeah, we're not giving you guys those numbers anymore. You guys can't be trusted.
Oh, Sanjaya?
Sanjaya, that's right.
Yeah. Maybe they were like, if we let too many people know what the numbers are, then they'll start to like question. I mean, honestly, if American Idol was still popular now, I don't even know if it's still on the air. I don't think so.
There's like five spinoffs, but I don't know if the original.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like so many, like The Voice, The Masked Singer. Like there's so many shows that do that now.
Yeah, there's always like versions of it, but I do feel like the amount of popularity that show had, there would absolutely be like conspiracy theories right now about like, oh, Taylor Hicks was obviously getting like that George Soros money. Debbie Wasserman Schultz absolutely put her finger on the scale to get her to win. Yeah. Like that, honestly, people probably, wasn't there like a stat that more people voted for American Idol than they actually did the president?
President, yeah. But also, I mean, it's so much easier. You can do it from a phone.
Like, yeah, that's true.
True. Yeah, you don't have to register.
Yeah, come on. I don't have to register. I don't have to go somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is really just an argument to making voting easier, but that's not going to happen.
This was the highest rated finale in Idol history. Ratings spiked during the show's last half hour with 43 million viewers. Numbers usually reserved for the Oscars.
Ugh.
So
43 million people watched the Oscars?
Congratulations to
this was
Taylor
2006. Hicks. Yeah, they people didn't have much to do.
Yeah.
Not the internet, now, but you know, back then they watched that many people.
No, that's crazy though. Like that's, I mean, the Oscars. Yeah, I guess everyone does watch the Oscars. It's just kind of weird because it's just like every time I watch the Oscars now, I'm just like, why am I doing? I don't even know why I'm doing it.
I haven't watched most of the things. I don't understand what's happening the entire time.
Yeah.
Well, like, Frances McDormand howled like a wolf, and some other stuff happened. I don't really remember.
Some other stuff happened. You know, you get the highlights.
I think like I don't know, like Glenn Close did a rap. I remember that.
Somebody laughed, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah. They love that one. Yeah. They love. Or maybe she just like, no, yeah, she did like a dance or a rap. And I just remember thinking like, you're better than this, Glenn. Like you're one of the greatest living actors right now.
It's like, we're all just going to laugh and pretend that this is enjoyable and fun.
And forget it 10 days later. Yeah.
Yeah.
In other news, two teens were charged with MySpace.com extortion.
Nice.
Two New York teenagers are in police custody Wednesday, facing illegal computer access and attempted extortion charges after they allegedly threatened to shake down the popular website MySpace.com unless its operators paid them $150,000, prosecutors said.
That's not a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a weird amount.
Oh, okay, that's like honestly not much.
Yeah.
Yeah. like you might, it's so low that I kind of get the logic. Like they'll probably do it,
yeah.
You know, like why go through the hassle of like calling the cops and all
calling
that
the
shit?
Cops, it's like, oh, please.
You clearly just need the money for probably a medical bill. You know,
that's like a medical bill amount of money.
Yeah.
Sean Harrison, 18, and Saverio Mondelli, 19, of Suffolk County, New York, allegedly hacked into the social networking site and stole personal information from MySpace users. After MySpace booted them from the site, the pair threatened to distribute a foolproof method for stealing information unless MySpace paid them $150,000. They were arrested Friday when they traveled to Los Angeles to allegedly collect the payoff. Instead, they were taken into custody by undercover officers from the multi-agency electronic crimes task force who posed as MySpace.com employees.
Damn.
I looked up one of the guys, and he is actually the director of product management at Disney Streaming Services now. So, you know,
what?
Good for him.
Get the fuck out of here.
What? Yeah. Like, how do you, okay.
Wait. One of the, you're talking about one of the people who did the scam?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He works at Disney
based
now?
Based on his LinkedIn and the picture of him that looks incredibly similar to the other guy with his same name that was arrested in 2006. Yeah. I mean, wow. He obviously was good at computer.
Yeah,
I mean, clearly.
You know how to do computers.
Yeah,
so.
I could do computer for you. I almost did computer for $150,000. So I'll do it for you.
If he's working at Disney, I definitely feel like this is some kind of like he had to pay a cancer bill.
Oh, for sure.
This is a good guy thing.
I think this was just like he showed this news story at various job interviews and people were like, well, this guy is obviously a self-starter.
Entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, exactly.
Badass.
Yeah. This guy's cool. Let's bring him on. I love that. Let's make him CEO.
Yeah.
White people can get away with anything. It's just like he just immediately gets a job at. Good for him, man.
I mean, this was like 24 years ago. Wait, no. What is it? 15 years ago? There we go. He's had a lot of jobs in between. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
good
amazing.
For him.
Wow. America, land of opportunity, baby.
I got arrested one time in my life, and all I want is to get a full-time job. That's all.
Yeah, but did you do anything as cool as hack MySpace? Probably.
No, I stole MySpace? A sweater from Robinson's May. Okay?
Oh, that's not cool.
I know. It followed me around for the rest of my life.
Was that when Nick the Bitch sold you out?
That's when Nick the Bitch sold me out. I've told that story before. I stole it for him. And he ran away, and I got arrested with my brother. Anyways, I was in fifth grade. Doesn't matter. Point is, I'm very proud of this guy for, finding a career.
Turn it around.
The top movies in the country were Inside Man, V for Vendetta, Stay Alive, which I didn't remember at all, some kind of horror movie, Failure to Launch, and The Shaggy Dog.
Failure to Launch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Matthew McConaughey. The top pop song in the country was Temperature by Sean Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And the top rock song was Speak by Godsmack.
No, hell yeah.
Kind of remember that.
Don't really remember it. Yeah.
I don't remember Speak, but, Godsmack was great.
Yeah, Godsmack. I remember them as a band.
Yeah. I was like, cool name, guys.
And
that rules.
That does it for the Remember When machine.
So that's what was going on at the time that this episode came out. You got your cultural context. You know,
that's
Godsmack was big. Taylor Hicks was also.
Sean Paul was ruling the charts.
Absolutely.
I was 15 years old and listening.
Sean Paul was everywhere.
Sean Paul, he was everywhere.
He was great. And this is probably around the time Adrian Brody did that thing on SNL that I can't escape my timeline. good times in American history.
Yeah. It was some of the better parts of the early 2000s.
Yeah. You know, I mean, listen, we're going a full episode now with none of those news stories being about the war in Iraq. So I'm feeling pretty good. You know, things were looking up probably, at least for this episode. But to get into this episode now, Vince, you already, you read the synopsis about, you know, the gang begins to turn on itself and, you know, Tony is still in a coma and Christopher is entering the, is trying to give another shot to the movie business.
This is a big episode. It's part two of the Kevin Finnerty saga and the introduction to Cleaver.
Yes. Now, last time we had this character, JT Dolan, who is a screenwriter character that they introduced last season. And
just
it's
one
kind
of my favorite Sopranos minor characters, like easily.
Same.
I just started watching, but really enjoyed what he had to do here. from the just like yelling at his class, like a whole room full of writers.
You did nothing.
Like, yeah, buddy, it's a room full of writers.
Yeah, right.
Have you met them? There's a girl in there with a top hat. It's like, it's the kind of hat that you wear when you don't want to move fast.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, you are about aesthetics. You're not about physically, like, stopping a crime.
You're writing. You're not trying to get involved.
Yeah. I love the logic in his head, like, as if writers, like, it's like a whole room full of cops would have made more sense.
But
so last time we had JT Dolan on, obviously, you know, I made the Bada B story specific to him being a TV writer because he was, you know, doing talking about trying to get this job at Law and Order, which you did not get in that episode. And so this time around, my Bada B story is once again a TV theme song. So, ladies and gentlemen, here is this week's Bada B story.
Show me the gabagool. Episode 603 of The Sopranos. AJ flunked out of school. Silvio's filling Tony's shoes. Oh, as long as he's in a coma, Polly and Vito gotta pay Carmela and Chrissy. He fought JT.
That's it. For those of you who couldn't understand the lyrics, it doesn't matter. Those that covered everything.
Yeah, we got. Yeah.
I did love Growing Pains. Gotta say, watch that show a lot.
That may be the third rewatch podcast we do after the Dawson's Creek one, and of course after Pot Yourself a Gun. Just a real brief recap. We've got Silvio filling Tony's shoes while he's in a coma. We've got the fact that Paulie and Vito have found out that they have to pay Carmela for, you know, all the money that would be given to Tony. And they're both very, very resentful of that fact. We have Chrissy, who tracks down the screenwriter JT Dolan and forces him to write a screenplay for a horror film that he has dubbed Cleaver, which is a very big plot point in The Sopranos. In the future, you will see more and more about Cleaver. Really a fantastic script. And then, of course, we have Tony still being in a coma and it ending with him eventually dying and then waking up. His heart stops and then he wakes up. So yeah, let's initial thoughts on this episode. Vince, what'd you think?
I mean, again, like I said last episode, this one was much better than I remembered. I sort of remember this arc as just me being annoyed that we were watching this guy named Kevin Finnerty instead of what was happening like in the Sopranos universe. And
totally,
you know, going back to it, like they're definitely doing an art pretty hard, but like I didn't feel trapped in the dream sequence like I remembered being. I don't know if that's something that comes later, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ashley, how'd you feel about this episode as your re-entry into The Sopranos?
I mean, I really liked it. I thought, you know, just jumping in somewhere, I'd be a little like, I hate this. I'm bored. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
I actually really loved it. And I thought there were so many tiny moments where, even though I did not fully know the relationship between these characters, like, I kind of could pick up on it. Like, when the Polly guy goes in and is just like annoying the shit out of Tony in a coma, telling him the most like boring story, and then he like, has a heart attack. Like, that's, again, just very funny. People told me this show was so funny.
Yeah.
I probably would have watched it more. And everything with like the son, he just seemed like he was the worst. And,
yes.
Like,
I'm a little hungry. Wait, so people didn't tell you that this show was funny? Because that's, to me, like, that's sort of the main draw of
people,
The Sopranos.
People don't know that.
No one, I'm always just watching. I'm like, this is some funny stuff. Yeah. He's telling this black lady not to smoke ganja. That's and then I'm always like, oh, but I guess it's like serious art time, like manly feelings. I don't know.
Yeah, no. See, that I think is that is the way that it was marketed. The show was marketed as like, this is like, what if The Godfather was a TV show? Because like The Godfather, great movie. I don't think I laughed once. You know what
yeah,
I mean? But and so I think
that guy,
like,
would be like a comical buffoon in real life, probably. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, you, what, Michael Corleone would be?
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, they're all stupid. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, you know, that gets lost in the kind of marketing of the show. And I think is one of the reasons why there are like holdouts to, you know, the show. You go on Twitter and sometimes you'll just see a random take that will be like, I don't know why people would like this show. It's a, you know, it's filled with like toxic masculinity, and it's like, it is, but not in the way you think. You know, it's like, it's actually it's a comedy about toxic masculinity.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
Emasculation, you know, it's like suburban malaise. It's like, it's trying to be a man's man in a world where there's an Applebee's next door, you know?
Yeah.
So it is incredibly funny. And
it's
this,
so funny. Yeah. And everything with like the screenwriting stuff, like them just sitting around like, okay, then it's like Ghostbusters, another hit. Then it's this movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I almost like want weird. David Chase to do like another version of Studio 60 or whatever that Aaron Sorkin show was,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
about
Studio 60 on Sunset Strip.
Like,
yeah,
the Sopranos, when they're making fun of TV writers, is they're really hitting on all cylinders, and it's the funniest they ever are is when they're making fun of TV writers.
Absolutely. It is like, and as we've said before on this podcast, it definitely comes from a place of the creator David Chase wanted to be a filmmaker. He didn't think he thought the Sopranos, he wrote it as a movie at first, and like it became a TV show. And I think he's always been resentful of the world of television. And so it, to me, it comes through in the way he writes his TV writer characters or just Hollywood characters in general as a bunch of like, you know, narcissistic scumbags who have this very high opinion of themselves and have created like this narrative that's entirely constructed out of their like ego for themselves, rather than, you know, taking a real look in the mirror and realizing, oh, I'm like a degenerate gambler who is now, you know, stuck writing Cleaver for the mafia.
I mean, it's the old, yeah, familiarity breeds contempt thing. Like, it's always much better and more cathartic and fun to mm-hmm. make fun of things that you know and that part of you like enjoys, but you also mm-hmm. hate yourself for it, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
You just get to voice all your self-doubts and like all the like fears that you have when someone else asks you to explain what you do, and
yes,
you imagine, yeah, what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Put it all on the page.
Yeah. And so I think then we should start with the Chrissy storyline, which is Chris Moltisanti is got an idea for a movie. And the movie is not yet called Cleaver, but the first you see of Chris in this episode, he is in the hospital, and it's just this aside where he's just, you know, talking about, like, you know, the Godfather, or like he's basically just like he's pitching like Vito on how he can make money, you know, writing a movie. And then we get to our introduction of.
Yeah, his whole like, I like the idea that his whole takeaway from like the rise of the sort of like the digital horror movie and like the found footage thriller, like his big takeaway is like, well, anybody can do it now. Like, it's, you don't even have to have talent. It's just like you got film it with the camcorder.
Yeah, I love how he's just like, you put some words on the page, you get some people, you make a movie. It's fun. And he's like naming all of these like hits. He's like, it could be, and it's like those were all hard movies to make.
Yeah, right. None of this is easy. But he's like, he's more interested in the money made off of giving people like a shitty film. Like he's like low overhead and sell it to Asian markets. That's the big thing.
You know, he's a businessman. You know.
Exactly.
Suddenly the business model makes sense to him, whereas it didn't before on, you know, like The Godfather. But now he's like, yeah, you put $1 million into this camcorder piece of shit and it grosses $100 million worldwide and you're set.
Yes. It's so good. And so we get our first taste of JT Dolan since the last time he was on the series, teaching a workshop at the Writers Guild and then getting assaulted by Benny and Chris's sponsor, which is fucking hilarious. And I have a clip of that scene.
We are all hung up, but we are also hung up on our own hang up. We mythologize our inner narrative, but the habit, the disease. Ah, fresh casualties in the battle of the blank page. Welcome to the Writers Guild. Have a seat. Take me. My past as an addict.
Get the fuck up!
Just the idea of him being mid talking about mythologizing your own past.
Yeah.
And then low-key comparing it to, like, I don't know, he's like comparing it to Beowulf or like who is and Grendel,
also warfare, like they're refugees from the battle of the blank page, like you can't think of shit to write, so now you're from a war-torn country.
Yeah, a war-torn... he absolutely deserves to be beat up after what he just said. Like, it's just the most perfect moment of karma. You're like, fuck this guy. And then you're like, oh, great. Thank you.
There's just a girl there who's wearing a top hat and it's never addressed or explained. It's just like, yeah, it's a bunch of writers. They all look like assholes.
Right. One of them would have a top hat.
Yeah. You get enough writers in a room, someone's going to wear a funny hat.
Look,
it's part of it.
I was in the MFA MFA program, and there's definitely some people with personal affectations going on. It's definitely a thing.
It's, you know, some people need to express themselves physically through fashion, even when they can't express themselves through their writing.
So the two guys that come in there are Vinnie Delpino, whose name I forget in The Sopranos, but he will always be. He's basically playing Vinnie Delpino in this show, which is funny.
You talking about Benny?
Yeah. He's Benny Delpino from Doogie Howser. And he's basically playing the same character. Like, he even calls people like Mrs. S and
right.
Later in the show he says how they doing, well, not so hot, so Mrs. you know. Like, that's very much like a Vinnie Delpino line. But yeah, it's Vinnie Delpino and this guy who's apparently named Murmur, but I don't know that they've ever explained that yet. This was just something that I looked up when reading about the show. Like, the other guy,
The other guy who hits him, who's not Benny, is he is Chris's sponsor in AA, which is just so fucking funny. I love that. Like, there's like AA groups in this show, and you'll see more of this season, that have like a fair amount of wise guys in them. Mm. And I love the idea of being able to compartmentalize the fact that you're like a sociopathic murderer. and like a violent mobster.
Yeah.
And also being like, you know, it's you know, progress, not perfection. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Like, AA has this whole sheen of like self-righteousness. Like you're doing mm-hmm. all these like altruistic things like for yourself and for the
yeah.
world. And then you apply that to people whose job it is to like exploit people. And like,
yeah,
it's perfectly compartmentalized in their mind that they can do both at the same time. And it almost gives them confidence to compartmentalize the two in a way.
Well, it makes you better at your job, you know, because like being an alcoholic, no matter what you're doing, is getting your life is not manageable. Right. And so it's like and you see it all the time in like regular AA meetings where it's like you don't know the person next to you what their job is, but you know that we're all addicts in a room trying to help each other, trying to stay clean, trying to stay sober. But like some of them are hedge fund managers, you
right.
know.
So, I guess yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's like a very, it's like a communal.
World.
It's like an avowedly like communal helping. You know, it's like a help community. Like you're there to
it's yourself.
Yeah, it's like you're there to help people, and then you apply that to people whose job is just like directly to be predatory and exploitative.
Yeah,
and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's just funny. It's just taking it to the extreme as the show does. Like, what if mobsters wanted to get sober? And of course, you know, JT, we met JT the first time at an AA meeting where he was sharing. And in that episode, all he was doing in his share was talking about his writing credits. And like, you know,
and now he's in a writing class, and all he's talking about is his addiction, basically.
His addiction. Yeah, yeah, exactly. His no matter what room he's in, he's trying to impress people with his, like, you know, he's not in a room full of addicts. He talks about his credits as a writer. In a room full of writers, he talks about his credits as like a real guy with a story.
Yeah.
And of course, he immediately gets hit on the head, dragged into a car.
Well, also, the
another wounded warrior of the Blenty.
Well, the last time we meet him, he was, you know, he had had to pawn his laptop to pay like his gambling debts, and now he has the laptop is back, only he's getting brained with it, which is great.
Oh, that's
like,
right,
like he's cleaned himself up, he finally has gotten out of debt, he's bought himself a laptop, he's got this class, and then boom, he just gets hit upside the head with it, which is a great metaphor.
It's two laptops that the mafia has destroyed. And yeah, so Chris drags him into a car and threatens him a bunch, and then pitches Cleaver, which is just the most schizophrenic like scene. It's just yeah. watching him like yeah.
I'm convinced this is actually how like movie executives think. Like they don't yeah. really. It's not really like it doesn't come from like this inspiration of. I've got this personal story to tell. It's more yeah. like I've found an opening in the market, and I'm going to combine these two things to create like a bigger yeah. tent pole.
And we'll be able to launder some money. And then I love the part the writer guy is mostly just like, and if I do this, you'll forgive all my debts. Like he just,
yeah, right.
Like that's like I can just vomit whatever on the page.
Yes.
And you will forgive my debt.
And by the yeah, way, like, and yeah. And yes. This is also sort of how The Sopranos was created to some extent. Like David Chase was like, yeah, I got this story about this guy who has a problematic relationship with his mother and he's Italian. And it was kind of like, yeah, no one. And he has a shrink. And it was kind of like, yeah, no one cares about that. And he's like, okay, but what if it was the mafia? And they're like, yes, greenlit.
That's totally right.
My idea is Saw meets Godfather 2. Proven track record, both genres. Young wise guy, assassin, gets betrayed by his people. They whack him. Leave his body parts in dumpsters all around the city. Long story short, he is put back together by science, or maybe it's supernatural. And he gets fucking payback on everyone who fucked him over, including the cunt he was engaged to. She was getting porked by his boss the night the hero was killed. Bing. 2:30, don't make me come look for you.
An entire room full of writers, and you did nothing!
Of course they did nothing. They were hoping to have something to write about tomorrow.
Like, yeah, come on. They were literally like our disappearing teacher. Like, it, like, someone already started on the short story, dude. Sorry.
They were refugees from the Battle of the Blank Page, and you just, like, built them a home.
Yeah, exactly.
I was curious because, like, that's, I think, twice in the episode he talks about, like, Saw. And I was like, I did not realize the impact of the Saw franchise on culture in the early 2000s. Like, everybody was just trying to find the next Saw.
Absolutely, that is something that, you know, I think continues to some extent to this day. Yeah. That it was kind of like reawakened or whatnot after Get Out was such a huge success. But I remember at the time. And for maybe like, I don't know, a decade after, low budget horror film,
I mean,
was like the only thing you could make if you were a new writer. It was like, how can we make this into a horror film?
It's still
any
thing,
idea.
And also, like, Saw did give us like two really good filmmakers. Like, it gave us like James Wan and Lee Wan, who made like Aquaman and like The Invisible Man, respectively. Like, they both have like really good careers separately after creating Saw, and
Saw has its high points.
Yeah, I love Saw personally.
I still have never seen the first one. I've never seen any of them. I don't think
I've only seen the first one.
It's got what's his name? The guy from Princess Bride,
Cary Elwes.
Yeah, he's great in it. You know, I mean, he's actually not. He's like particularly terrible in it, but. I think it was because he did not expect this to be a movie people saw. So he's like, I'm phoning this one in. And it ended up being a big hit. The idea is simple, guys. It's Saw meets The Godfather 2. And
So I just want to pause here.
Yeah.
Because I have this theory that, like, if you just Google any British actor, they always turn out to be like quasi royalty or like the scion of some really old family. And I swear to God, I knew nothing about Cary Elwes. I just put him in. I was curious what his background is. I've never looked this up before. He is the youngest of three sons of portrait painter Dominic Elwes and interior designer and socialite Tessa Kennedy. His paternal grandfather was the portrait painter Simon Elwes, whose own father was the diplomat and tenor Gervase Elwes. His other great-grandfathers include the diplomat Rennell Rodd, first Baron Rennell, and industrialist Ivan Ricard Ivanovich. Like, every single goddamn British actor has some sort of weird... Like, I looked up, what's her name from the Queen's Gambit?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Her dad is like a super rich industrialist slash like powerboat racer. There is not a single one who does, like Rafe Fiennes, his real name is like Rafe, like Twizzleton Schenectady. Like, he has like seven names. They're all like nobility. It's crazy.
Twizzleton Schenectady.
Yeah.
Okay. You want me to look that one up for you?
Yeah.
Because now I have
the Yorkshire Schenectadies.
Ralph Nathaniel Twizzleton Wykeham Fiennes. Like, his actual his last name is actually Twizzleton Wykeham Fiennes. That's his born name.
Jesus Christ.
Double hyphenate.
That's so many hyphens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know,
that's too much.
Just look up any British actor. It's a fun game. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself. mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, so then later we have the big pitch. Chrissy introduces JT to Little Carmine and some of the other, quote, investors on the project, all mafia people. And then JT pitches the idea to all of them in possibly one of my favorite scenes.
I did have a
series.
Question. He said 2:30 at the Bing. Did he mean 2:30 in the afternoon or 2:30 in the morning? Because it seems unclear.
I don't know. He also said at the Bing, and that clearly wasn't the Bing. We usually do not get this granular on the show.
Right.
But
I was just very curious because if you picked a time for me to like brainstorm something, like between 2 and 5 in the afternoon would be the absolute worst time. I'd just be like, I don't know. Sure. That's like nappy time for me. My brain goes night night.
But that's usually when we podcast, bro.
Yeah, exactly. I would be so much better at this at any other time.
Well, that explains why you sound tired all the time. Okay, this is one of my absolute favorite scenes from the series.
We've been working on a new kind of slasher film. It takes place in the world of, you know, the mafia.
It's about a wise guy with a big mouth and bigger dreams.
So, right, he's kind of outshining his boss, so the guy has him clipped, but he's still alive when they cut him up.
Oh, he's gonna feel that the next day.
Right. So at the dump, his body reassembles itself, all except for a hand that got crushed. So he ties a cleaver onto the stump. Right now, it's called Pork Store Killer, but I'm thinking cleaver.
That feels like a veteran move to give them like your rough draft title, but then immediately follow it with like your actual better
with a title. Good title.
Yeah, so then the people
great,
could be
but
like,
I was also thinking
a good yeah, yeah. Right, exactly.
And then people are like, ooh, that is a good title.
Yeah. It's called Spooky Spooky Scary Time, but I was thinking, you know, just like, oh, that is better. Yeah, yeah. For sure that's like a classic pitch move. Yeah.
Right now it's called Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, but I was thinking actually we could call it Friends.
Two Girls, One Cup. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that. All right. either one.
How's he evening up with anybody? He's a ghost?
As I understood, a zombie of sorts. Great title, by the way.
But if they jointed him, he's not going to end up all in the same dump.
And how's that a slasher film?
What are you talking about?
A slasher. A couple of kids naked in the lake. Certified maniac on the loose.
This is so perfect because, I don't know, when you write about movies, you always run into someone who's like a genre stickler where they're like, yes. No, that's not the same because actually he was dead the whole time and thus it can't be, you know.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that Silvio is like the genre stickler where he's like, come on,
yeah.
This is not a slasher movie. What are you talking about?
Like, technically, that's not a slasher. Like, wait, and if they're not in the same place, how's the body? I can't imagine.
Yeah, technically, this is a gothic romance and not a horror film. So, yeah.
You know, it reminds me of like, if you've ever like given your script to someone to get notes who is not someone who also writes, a lot of times, like the shit that they're gonna point out is stuff that is just like not at all based on anything other than their kind of like their idea of what's logical and what's not logical. Yeah. Like they'll
or
say,
things
like,
that they've seen before. Like you're trying to write a thing that's like new and fresh in some way and they're like,
yeah,
I can't fit this into the preconceived categories that I already am bringing to this.
I don't know, this scene reminds me of that in that they're all like, but how can he end up at the same dump? Usually when we cut up a body they end up at separate dumps on you know, intentionally so that the police do not put the body back together. yeah, I love that. But I do also love Sil, like, being, like, very much a stickler for the genre.
Not a ghost.
Actually, the maniac is almost always a supernatural force. Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers from Halloween.
Get the fuck out.
Easy, Sil, easy. He's making a point.
Michael Myers is an escaped mental patient. Jason or Freddy, different kind of movie.
Well, that's the kind we're doing here. Saw, The Ring, they made millions, and that's not even including the Godfather angle, which we got here.
What if they disposed him at stops that happened to be along the same route? Then he would all end up in the same dump.
But he's a ghost?
I don't know.
Ghostbusters, another fucking money machine.
I mean, but he's a ghost feels like a good alternate title for this episode. Yeah.
But he's a ghost?
We also we skip past the part where we find out that Little Carmine has you know, some movie producer experience with the South Beach Strumpet series.
That's right, yes. Little Carmine mostly produces porn, but he's thinking about getting into the horror business, which is... I mean, you know, it actually it's semi-logical.
Yeah, it feels
I mean,
like he's a like, logical well, arc.
I've got the equipment and I've got the money. What else do we need here but a good script from a great writer who is doing this under duress?
Yeah. Clearly brilliant. He teaches the best of the best.
He does, yeah. All the top-hatted writers in New York come to him. He's the king of WGA East, and he shall remain so. But yeah, I also, there's something about Benny just doing that what if with a pause, which is if you've ever brainstormed with someone and then they say the worst, just like a completely irrelevant thing, just like, what if they're all along the same route? Coincidentally.
I mean, it feels like a good note here, you know?
Yeah, it does make sense of the story because they do sure. end up in the same dump. I mean, that you gotta account for that.
You gotta account for it somehow. But to not look at the story as a whole and just try to like poke plot holes into what's essentially just like a 3-sentence like synopsis pitch is. Oh, I love it. Yeah. So then, you know, after that pitch, later, you know, Chrissy will meet with Tony, who eventually does get out of a coma. But we got to get into these other storylines as well, you guys.
A lot in this episode.
Yeah, we open with a big bang. There's a big score at the beginning. And there's actually a shootout, which is sort of rare for The Sopranos. Sopranos is not really like a big shootout show where there's right. like exciting gunplay and and it was a little weird at first, but then in the middle of it Polly does get kneed in the balls, and that turns out to be like the big takeaway from what makes The Sopranos is that like this moment of like exciting shootout is not really a climax of any kind. It's more a jumping off point for like Polly's balls hurt and people are fighting over who's going to have to kick up to whom.
Yes. Yeah. And I love that, like, just a little insight into, like, Polly's character. Very subtle, but, like, when they first raid that room, first they, like, you know, they find the room that has, you know, the drug dealers, whatever, counting the money, and they chase this, like, little dude. And then they use him as a human shield as they bust into the room. And then they start, they shoot the guy who's counting money. And then all this money starts like flying in the air, like from the money counting machine. And Polly gets distracted. And rather than like clearing the rest of the room, he just starts like, putting money in his pockets. He's just like, oh, money. Cause like that's pretty much all Polly cares about. And his storyline is very much about, how cheap he is and how much he does not like to part with a dollar. So as he's like trying to like get the money, he of course gets sneaked up on from behind, almost gets stabbed in the back, gets instead kneed in the balls. And then, yeah, they find $2 million or so in a dishwasher. This storyline ties in a lot, like the Polly and Vito stuff tie a lot into like what's happening via like vis-a-vis Carm's storyline and also Tony, who is in a coma. So
sort of touch on this a little bit. But one thing I always wonder about in these mafia storylines is like it's all based around like so-and-so's getting points on this business and so-and-so's getting points on that business and for this scheme. But they're all cash businesses and they're all presided over by people who are like professional crooks. Like the idea that you're gonna get an accurate percentage of whatever thing that you're supposed to be getting points on, like I can't imagine you're ever getting the actual 10% or whatever you're owed of what, you know what I mean? Like
I think they work on the honor system a little bit. Sure. everyone does skim. But, you skim just enough for it to be believable and not get killed.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, with Polly and Vito, they get into somewhat of a financial pickle because of the fact that Vito gave him the tip as to where the, like, Colombian safe house was with all that money. And, of course, Vito wants his cut. And it has to be presided over by Silvio, who is now taking over for Tony. He is acting boss as Tony is in a coma.
And suddenly he has asthma. This is a new thing. There's been 6 seasons. We've never.
He seemed like the kind of guy who'd have asthma.
Sure. Exactly. And that's why I love the choice of like he has asthma during this, because it's like he is kind of. What do you call it? He's like not OCD, but he is sort of a clean freak.
He's a fastidious kind of guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, his hair piece always looks really nice. He's very clean cut. He doesn't like to get, you know, his hands dirty. You know, he does violence occasionally, but for the most part, he's about strategy advice, you know,
right.
And he talks about that with his wife, Gabby. So yeah, this storyline, is about, you know, kind of like Gabby not pressuring Syl to take control, but kind of like getting him prepared for the idea that he might be the boss of the family soon if Tony doesn't wake up. And I feel like watching him fumble through, you know, like this opportunity in some aspect was like one of my favorite storylines of this episode was him having to preside over all of these different disputes and acting as if he was the boss.
Yeah.
Like at one point,
like, yeah, he didn't have the confidence.
He had no confidence. At one point he like gets into the hospital he's like, oh, how's Carmela doing? And they're like, oh, she's not doing well. And he snaps his finger. He goes, memo. And then he like tries to dictate a memo to Benny or something. And it's just so funny because you're watching like someone who's essentially middle management get his shot.
Yeah. To me, this was like, I sort of related it to like, he's consigliere. So he, like, his job is to give advice to Tony. So to me, he's sort of like the McKinsey consultant of the mafia, where he's like, you know, supposedly like the smart one. And
right.
The idea is that like, oh, I know how to do this. And if I were given the reins, like this would be done differently and more efficiently. But then, of course, like he actually gets this opportunity and realizes that he kind of doesn't know what he's talking about most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's definitely put in a position of like, I mean, because you realize like the job of the boss, whether it's the mafia or anything, is like the decisions you make are somewhat arbitrary. They're kind of set, you know, based on like set precedent of like, here's what you're supposed to do in this situation. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's a dictatorship and he's just trying to do the diplomatic choice to make everyone happy. And instead, he makes no one happy. And I think there's no more clear example of that than the scene with the sit down that they have on the toilet. And I have a clip of that.
Carmela, she gets T's cut under the circumstances, correct? It's your call.
I know it's my fucking call. Yes, that is the correct thing.
I love the pause and yes, that is the correct thing. It's just,
I love this scene because I just love before people had smartphones, like he goes in the toilet and he like sets up his like his newspaper and his coffee.
Yes.
Like, I'm really about to take my time, and then they just ruin it.
Yeah. The idea of being interrupted on the toilet to take a work call is it's a very real thing, because like nowadays, like you said, we would have our phone, you know, but then if we got like that fucking Slack bing that came up. We would just immediately be like, not while I'm shitting. It's like,
yeah, it took me back to those like aughts days where I would like, you know, put a bunch of internet articles like in a notebook file and like print it out and take it to the bathroom to read.
Yes.
Yeah. Smartphones killed that.
It reminds me of my last desk job where I swear I went to the bathroom four times a day at least, and most of the time I would spend in there just trying to clear my, it was like meditative. I was just like, I'm here to enjoy myself, because I know as soon as I get back to my fucking desk, I'm gonna have something that I have to do that I don't want to do. And you see him like trying to enjoy himself, but you know, can't escape it.
Not when you're the boss.
Not when you're the boss. This is, you gotta pay the cost to be the boss.
Be the boss.
All right, the scene continues.
Oh, ladies' room next door.
I can reach it from here. I'm gonna get T's piece of my half to sell here for her. Of the thing.
Back up there, Bluto. Your half? It was fucking mayhem. You said the place was empty. Doc says I need an ultrasound on my groin and balls. Syl, you wanna weigh in here?
It breaks half and half. That's $100,000 apiece. You got it?
No question.
Of course. I got a piss first. You want half for that too?
Yeah, nice. I gotta say, I really do love the banter between them. Him coming into Pauly walking into the bathroom and seeing Vito and saying, "Hey, ladies' room is over there," and then Vito going, "I could reach it from here." Yeah. I mean, beautiful. Mm-hmm. He's saying his dick is so big.
Thank you.
That from the men's bathroom, he could wrap around to. I mean, that's a big dick.
Big dick.
That's too big. That's hell.
It's those little details.
Yeah. That's yeah, it's what makes the show is the tiny banter that is just so colorful for these characters. Speaking of tiny details, so Vito, the fat one, he's gay. And nobody really knows that he's gay. He's closeted.
Is that why there's like that whole weird thing with like the girl's boyfriend?
Oh, yes, exactly.
Oh, yep, I was wondering about that. I was like, that felt a little gay.
Yeah. So he's Finn is the only one who knows because he actually caught him blowing a dude when he worked at a construction site for like a summer. And so he's mortified of this guy. He's super scared that this guy is going to like do something to him because he's the only one who knows that dirty little secret that he is that he's gay. And what I love is there's a scene where Vito is talking to Phil Leotardo, and Phil just out of nowhere says to him, "Hey, when you married my cousin, everyone used to say you look like John Travolta," which is a nice little way of just like calling him gay. Now, I don't think that at all Phil is calling him gay, but it's like one of those things where everybody knows he's gay, but if you were to ask, you know, the mafia, they'd be like, he can't be gay. That's impossible.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what do you mean? Just, you know, he's the straightest man I've ever seen. Have you seen him sing and dance? And it reminded me of...
Are you talking about the producers of Gotti?
I'm talking about the producers of Gotti, mm-hmm. who decided to cast him as John Gotti, even though he is the most...
Oh, that movie was bad.
Oh, it's terrible. But he's... Like they have to know he's gay, but I don't think they do.
Yeah,
and I think
I've always and I it's been something that I wondered like since the day that that movie was announced. I was like, isn't it? Do they know? I mean, they gotta just, know. Maybe they don't know.
I would love it if they were like, yeah, we know, we don't care. Love is love. But yeah. I know that's not the case because the Gotti family had to sign off on the movie.
Yeah,
and
like
those
Junior,
guys,
like John Gotti's son, John Gotti Jr., was like the driving creative force behind most of that. project, which is
Silvio is having a lot of trouble like keeping the peace between Bobby and Vito. Basically Vito is asking for money from everyone. He's trying to get a cut of like Bobby's random thing. Like Bobby has there's some decision about that like Junior made that Bobby doesn't like, and now Junior's in jail, and it doesn't really matter. All that matters is fucking Vito is trying to get a piece of everyone's action, and Silvio does not know how to handle this, and his asthma just gets worse and worse to the point at which at the very end of Silvio's storyline, he is being taken away in a stretcher having a gigantic asthma attack. And I have a little bit of that.
It's okay, honey. It's okay.
Can't breathe.
It's okay, honey. You're
gonna be okay. What's going on? Would you move your car, please, sir?
Sil, I didn't hear from you.
He's in a fucking stretcher being taken into an ambulance, and yeah. Bobby is still like, I need a decision to be made. It's just, you know.
I also love that he parks behind the ambulance.
Yeah, I love that.
He's just like, why would that be an issue?
Yeah, he's like, oh, hold on. This will just take a moment as someone is like literally gasping for air. The question I have.
It says a lot that like Silvio has failed. Like he's failed as a leader to the point where Bobby Bacala who's like the most normally like passive. The most passive and submissive member of the gang is like has become a nudge and like needing him to make a decision.
Totally. And the question I have about it is like, I'm not sure how much of this is like Syl actually having allergies and having asthma, which is something we've never seen on the show before. And how much of it is just like him having a gigantic panic attack, realizing he is going to be, you know, having to like mediate these fucking petty ass people for the rest of his probably shorter life now. And yeah, I mean, it's a sign that you're in a job that you fucking hate is when the idea of like getting promoted makes you want to die.
Yeah, it makes you want to go to the hospital and you can't breathe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is, I do think like some of it was panic. And I also think that, you know, he may have had asthma. Hard to tell. Yeah. And finally, you know, let's do Kevin Finnerty / Tony / Carmella.
Mm-hmm. And AJ, let's not forget AJ. I mean, he does.
Of course.
He's annoying, and I guess he drops out of school or something.
Well, and he shows up in a shirt that says "Most likes to Bogart," or "Most likely to Bogart." Is it?
Yeah.
420 plays it.
420 plays. Hell yeah. Yeah, AJ's. Yeah, I mean, AJ's storyline is fucking great because it opens with AJ going to the hospital. You know, with Carm and Meadow. And Bobby and Chrissy immediately go up to him and say, "Hey, we heard you were at the South Mountain Arena trying to buy a gun from that asshole in the snack shop," which is just, it's exactly where AJ would go to buy a gun. He's like, "Oh, I know one scumbag who works concessions at an arena." And
I love that he's like, "How'd you know that?" Like,
yeah. Yeah. Who told you?
Who told you? Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. As if, like, they control crime in North Jersey. What do you think these people do? I love it because, you know, they're telling him, like, "Hey, you know what? This is, I understand you want to do this, but, you know, there's no way you can get to Junior. He's in federal lockup." And AJ directly quotes The Godfather twice in this episode. He goes, "Difficult, but not impossible," which is a Godfather 2 quote. And of course, as soon as he says that, he takes a big sip from his like supersized soda because he is a fucking baby man. But he wants to, you know, like his entire experience of the mafia somehow is still based on movies and not at all based on like his actual family, because his actual family, you know, keeps him, sheltered from all this stuff. And, later in the next scene, AJ's freaking out because he forgot to bring Carmella's sweater, and he quotes The Godfather again when he refers to himself as a messenger boy, which is I think the character Johnny Ola in The Godfather 2 was the Sicilian messenger boy for Hyman Roth. Johnny Ola, played by fucking Dominique Chinese, or Chinese, the guy who plays Junior Soprano, played Johnny Ola, who was the messenger. Anyways, these are a little bit of trivia that I do for, I don't know who I do it for, nobody likes it, but I do trivia anyways. But I do love that AJ is like, is the albatross around Carmella's neck, because everyone else is pulling their weight except for him. And the only weight he wants to pull is to do a murder of his uncle.
Yeah.
Which is something.
It's not a well thought out plan.
It's not well thought out.
And he
he
dislikes his uncle for making him feel weird. But his uncle basically creeped him out. And that's why he hates him. He's like, "Oh, that fucking," in the last episode where he keeps complaining about the mummy. And,
he keeps calling him a mummy.
Yeah. It's because he was creeped out by the fact that he was old.
And he wants to kill him, not just because he shot, his father, but he wants to kill him because it was embarrassing that an old man shot his father. Yes. So it's like he wants to do it out of embarrassment, which is, you know, not a great reason to do a murder inside of a federal prison.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of that's like going back to The Wire. It's like Omar getting shot by like a little kid. Like, it comes out of left field and you feel like it shouldn't happen, like, because of, you know, like it's like a cosmic injustice somehow, but
right, you know, yeah,
everybody gets got, like, you know.
Everybody's gets got. That's a Wire spoiler for those of you
if you haven't watched The Wire yet. But yeah. Spoiler.
Hey, it's too late. If you haven't seen it, just watch it.
That's funny.
Yeah, Carmela in this episode is just kind of like quickly like careening into a wall of having like a nervous breakdown. You know, she's
looking hotter than ever. Weirdly,
she looks great.
She looks fantastic in Crisis. I love her little freak out at AJ. Like when she snaps at him, it is the most. It's like cathartic for me because someone has needed to yell at this kid for so long, and I have a little bit of that.
Swear to God, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
What the fuck?
You made a fool of yourself and our family on national fucking television?
They totally misquoted me.
Well, of course they did. That's what they do. Which is why I and everybody else told you, don't talk to the press.
You're the one who looked like a total asshole, dragging me around like I was 5 years old.
You're a cross to bear. That's all you are, to your father, to me, to everybody.
Fuck this. I fuck it all.
Jesus, Mel, what the hell's wrong with you?
What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?
Mom.
Edie Falco, once again, just kills it in every scene that she's
and
in.
Hugh, an underrated performance by Hugh, as always, being like the clueless
the father.
Dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
love her so much.
Nothing's wrong with her. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah. You know, what could possibly be going on in her life to make her freak out? I can't imagine.
Yeah. And then she ends up in a therapy session with Dr. Melfi, which is funny to me because, you know, like I'm sort of on the record that the therapy scenes are by far like my least favorite parts of The Sopranos.
I feel like that must be against some rules. Can you just be like, yeah, I'm your husband's therapist. I'll see you too.
But it's also on brand for Dr. Melfi to be not that great of a therapist. She breaks a lot of rules. There's a lot of moral lines being crossed, ethical lines.
She does, but I just thought it was interesting because like it immediately becomes apparent that like Carmela is a way more interesting therapy subject than Tony is. The therapy scenes like with Carmela in it, you actually get into some stuff that's interesting because I mean it's like there is this whole thing with her character where like how much is it denial and how much is it how much is it reflexive denial and how much of it is like actually like deliberate? And I mean, this therapy sequence seems to suggest that most of it is very deliberate.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you happen to get a clip from it?
No,
neither did I. I know you hate it. So I didn't get a clip.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was really good in this episode, I thought.
Well, you know, I'll put it in post, it's a great scene. They talk about one of the things that I thought was interesting to see from Carmela's perspective was her whole thing is not, oh my God, my son or my husband is in the mafia, you know, like in previous, like, I don't know, incarnations of her being in therapy. You've seen her like a couple of times and in bits of like therapy scenes, right? But like in previous ones she has kind of like been in crisis about it, but in this one she's resigned. She's like, listen, I know who Tony was. I've always known what he was, and I've known that most of the things I have are due to they're all ill-gotten gains. But her big thing is the fact that the longer her kids are around them, the more they are complicit with you know, what's going on. And I thought it was pretty insightful.
I
think it's interesting. She doesn't want to drag them into it. And then one of them is so eager to be brought in.
Right. I mean, at this point, the idea of getting I think she sees in AJ someone who is like such a fuck up that he's going to have no choice but to be in the mafia.
Well, right. It's like
he's going to be so bad at it.
And he's going to be so bad at it.
Well, it's like a weird accidental curse that they're doing. And it's like, and AJ's AJ's like the second or third generation that this has happened to, where like the yes. mafia dad is so determined to keep his son out of the mafia that he doesn't teach him anything, doesn't tell him anything about it. And so the son gets his idea of like what being a mafioso is basically like from The Godfather and Goodfellas and movies that he's seen. And yeah. so it's like you're on like the second or third generation of mafioso who has gotten all his ideas from popular fiction.
Right. Yeah. And just perpetuated this, like, you know, this constant, like, this new generation is just even more incompetent and more violent than the last one. And, you know, that's not good. That is certainly not good if you're running a business. But yeah, Carmela, you know, meanwhile, is spending most of this episode in the hospital, just kind of worried about Tony, who is still in a coma. And this episode wraps up the Kevin Finnerty storyline. You know, most of the stuff we saw with the Kevin Finnerty, you know, thing was in the previous episode. Tony is, you know, he has just been diagnosed in this like dream state or purgatory, wherever the fuck he is, as having Alzheimer's. He got slapped in the face by a couple of Buddhist monks, who thought he was another guy named Kevin Finnerty because he lost his ID or he like switched briefcases with someone else. And now he has taken on the identity of Kevin Finnerty.
Occasionally getting slapped in the face with Buddhism is like a nice metaphor for watching anything that David Chase has written.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. He likes to slap us in the face with Buddhism. Yeah. It's his favorite thing, no matter how much we're like, it seems like a superficial level of knowledge you have about this particular yeah. religion.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like you've gained much insight beyond like an affirmations calendar.
Yeah.
But so he ends up going over to the Buddhist temple after he gets like a court summons, and he tells them, you know, I have fucking Alzheimer's. And these scenes in general, I felt like for the most part, it was good, but it wasn't like, we don't get too much more about what's happening with Tony in this dream world, other than kind of them hitting us over the head a little bit more with like the fact that he's got a choice between like, he's at a supernatural purgatory thing.
Yeah, and he's like, he goes to this party, and Steve Buscemi's like, you going to the party, you're not gonna.
So Steve Buscemi is his cousin Tony B, who he actually killed last season. And he doesn't seem to recognize him. Presumably,
I thought he was just playing like, I don't know, a spooky death guy.
yeah, no, he is a
spooky ghost guy.
He is a spooky ghost guy, but he's a spooky ghost guy who Tony murdered previously. Oh. And he doesn't seem to recognize him, but it's clear like that whole sequence of him being in this, like, you know, at the Kevin Finnerty family reunion is supposed to be like, go towards the light, you know, and you know, your cousin's there. He thinks he sees his mother. And in the distance, he hears like,
what is that beacon anyway? And then you never get an answer.
Yeah, it's art, dude. They're doing art.
They're doing so much art.
Yeah, and he hears like his kid and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
he hears his kid like, daddy, don't die. Very importantly, the reason that he is at this particular party in the real world is because he is just flatlined. He has a heart attack because Pauly Gualtieri talked him to death. And this is just incredible. I have some of that.
The main thing when people come to sit with Dad, the doctors want positive talk. It helps in his recovery.
Got it.
Oof, Maron, he looks terrible.
Uncle Pauly. You can't say stuff like that. You have to stay positive.
Yeah, it's just not to prepare you for that.
I tell you, T, first the eyes, then the teeth. Next you find out you can't take pissing for granted. Some joke, eh?
You hear like the beeping of his heart going fast.
When I was in the service, I won the Chin-Ups Cup 3 weeks in a row. Guy asked me to model for the boxing poster.
He was half a fag, but I was flattered just the same. That fucking Angela T. I mean, do I blame myself for this life? The shit that happens? Like with Puss. Stand up one day, FBI rat fuck the next. I felt it here, T. I felt it right here.
Will you please shut up in there?
God damn it.
Shut up! Shut up in there!
So I said to Ma. The fuck?
Just being completely caught off guard to the fact that this dude just dies in the middle. Like, it is
I said it
so
from
funny.
The beginning, but the guy who does like the soundscapes for The Sopranos is just so good. Like, you can listen
Incredible.
To, you can turn off the video portion of The Sopranos and just enjoy it as like an audio soundscape because, full of deliberate choices and wonderful timed.
Really, really fucking great sound design. Just a fucking great. I mean, and a wonderful scene. Pauly.
Yeah. This is a nice, like, classic Sopranos mix of the mundane and the profound there. It was nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then he wakes up. They get his heart going again, they all celebrate. It's very sweet. It is a very nice moment when you see Tony, you know, has opened his eyes and his heart started again. In the final scene, we have then of course Vito and Pauly realize they have to give all that money to Carmela now because Tony is awake and he might be expecting that money because who knows what he heard in the coma.
Yeah.
The idea that he actually like is gonna wake up and expect money is very funny. And then Chrissy tells him, hey, I'm gonna go for the movie business, and since you have just, you know, obviously been shot and were in a coma and almost died, I will say that this is a demand because you are weak and I am strong. And I will. So he basically says, I'm doing this with or without your blessing. Come at me, bitch. And then Carmela wipes his, you know, lips with a fucking ice cube, which looked really nice. And Somewhere Over the Rainbow plays and the show ends. And that is. So that's the episode.
Also, another like thing that The Sopranos does that most shows wouldn't is like showing him looking like shit after waking up from a coma. I feel like almost every show, like someone wakes up from, you know, being sick in their deathbed or whatever, and they just look
full
like
makeup.
Full makeup. But he's got
their hair is done.
He's got like the dried, crusty stuff on his lips, and like his voice is all messed up from the breathing tube. Like very accurate on levels that shows don't usually do.
Totally. And he asks, am I dead? And they're like, no, you're in Newark, which may as well be dead. All right, real quick. Do either of you have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or a scene that we didn't talk about?
I think my favorite scene really was just like the chaos of them robbing those people, and it just like all go like just they did such a bad job.
Running
everywhere, him getting kicked in the balls, just good. Classic comedy.
It's a great way to open a mafia show. Is just having a robbery go wrong and someone getting just hit in the nuts. Pretty beautiful.
Yeah. For me, I mean, just like the reveal of Chrissy saying, it's Saw meets Godfather Part 2. Like, just that whole sequence was brilliant. Like, there was so much comedy packed into like two or three really tight sentences there that was really great.
Yeah. I agree. I think, every scene, there's nothing funnier than the scene where JT is pitching Saw to a room full of fucking like rubes and like mafiosos who just like the fact that they felt entitled to give notes is the funniest thing in the world to me. I love the idea of a bunch of guys who have never written a lick in their life trying to like poke holes in an idea that is essentially it's a horror film about a guy with a meat cleaver for an arm, and they're like, well, I don't know, there's we got to work on the logic of some of these stories. Just I love that so much. And yeah, I would say the real gangsta of this episode, if I had to pick one, would be studio executives giving notes to a screenwriter. That's the real gangster. Yeah.
I would say it's the crushing weight of existence.
Whoa, that was deep, dude.
Yeah, dude,
that
go Buddhist deep. With it. Let's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fuck yeah, man. And if I had to rate this episode, and I could give it any rating at all, as you all know, I would give it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, real tough choice. You know, after a lot of deliberation, I think I'm going to go solid B+.
Interesting choice. That is, that's very rare for this podcast. If you had to give this episode a rating, like what letter grade would you give this episode?
I, with my limited knowledge of The Sopranos, I would give it a B+.
Yeah,
seems like it mostly has all the makings of the things you need for a good episode of The Sopranos.
I love it. I think that is correct. It is a B+ episode of The Sopranos and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Ashley Ray, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I feel more motivated than ever to finally watch the entire show.
Hell yeah, you absolutely should, because you know what? It is one of the best shows that's out there. I don't know. It's like, it's a solid B+ show, you know? It's not perfect, but it's not bad. Check out The Sopranos. Where can people find you on the internet? Where can they find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at The Ashley Ray, T-H-E-E Ashley Ray, or Instagram at The Ashley Ray, just one E. Or, you know, I live in LA. I do a bunch of shows. You can head to my website to get tickets to whatever I'm performing at www.theashleyray.com.
Hell yeah. Check out the website. Follow her on Twitter. Go to her live shows. Patreon.com/Frotcast for all of the bonus episodes. That's where Vince and I do the Frotcast, and we talk about pretty much anything. We talk about movies. We talk about
Eternals, you know, NFTs.
Yeah, we just did an episode about the Eternals. It was a movie. And, of course, as you know, the $8 tier gets you a shout out at the very end of the episode. So Vince, we have four that we are doing today.
Oh boy.
All right. The first one is just Mark.
Just Mark? That's it?
That's it.
I'm going to have to call him Rube. You know, he's an easy Mark.
All right. Very good. Very good. Sure. Ben. What is Ben's? It's just Ben.
We call him Benny the Jet, because he likes the Sandlot, you know.
That's honestly not bad. There's a lot of, you know, Elton John / The Who themed mafia names. Okay, next is James Henderson.
We call this guy Jimmy Peeps because he's always eating those Easter candies all year round.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, and this is a makeup name for last episode. I gave him the wrong first name before, so I want to get it right. It's Matt Brighton.
What did we say before?
I don't even remember.
Mm.
So you got to start all over.
This is an easy one, but we just call him Matty B, like my favorite tween rapper.
Oh, Matty B Raps.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. All right. So those.
Or we could just call him the tween, you know?
Yeah. Hey, it's Matt the tween Brighton. He's, you know, he's not a man. He's not a boy, not yet a man. I don't know. All right. Point is, thank you guys so much for your $8 subscriptions. And you can do it right now and get yourself a shout out at patreon.com/Frotcast. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Holly keeps talking. Tony dies and he wakes up.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.